Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I'm going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. Billy is a man in his late 70s. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidt-Rüti. It's about 52 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. He's an extremely prolific author. He's written over 39 books. Of just a few of his books, for example, one of them is called The Might of the Thoughts, which I'm reading right now. Another one's called The Psyche, which I finished not long ago, but certainly could read many times again. Another great book of his, The Goblet of Truth. Billy has also written over 600 booklets that document his face-to-face contacts with extraterrestrial humans. Billy's writings answer all the big questions in life. Who are we? Where do we come from? What does our future have? How do the extraterrestrial humans go from star system to star system with no time passing? What evolutionary steps do human races go through? What's going to happen in our future? What has happened in our past? Who built the ancient megalithic structures all over the earth? These are just some of the questions answered by the material in the Meier case. And I have a person on the line here that has talked to me about the Billy Meier case before, and I think we're going to talk about it this evening and possibly some other topics as well. Solaris Blue Raven, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Mark. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very good. Enjoying this very warm weather, sunny, 84 degrees here in Ohio, Solaris. And how is it there in Colorado?
Oh, gosh. Rain, potential snow. Chilly willy. Oh,
that is terrible.
It's a little odd.
It's unseasonably cold there, right?
Well, I think it seems like it. It just seems like the weather's a little off. Yeah, I would say so. For Colorado, we get the winter storms or the spring storms rather, but it's a little bit different.
And what's new on your radio shows?
Not much. Just plugging along with my guests, and I have Dr. Richard Allen Miller coming up on Raven Starts Witching Hour tomorrow night. So we'll be discussing some interesting things. It just seems like these are very strange times. So I don't know, Mark. I mean, I'm sure you get that kind of burnout where it gets to the point where you kind of wonder what it's all about, you know, insofar as what's the point. And I think the Billy Meier material touches on a lot of this. It touches on the bigger spectrum, which I think is huge.
Have you ever heard of Dr. Bruce Lipton?
I've heard of him.
You haven't interviewed him yet? I haven't.
No.
I was watching one of his videos today, and I made some clips from his video. I got an interesting email from one of the people that works directly with Billy. Her name is Marianne Ullinger-Mondria, and she sent me a PDF. It was an article that's entitled, How Does the Mental Fluidal Power Enter the Cells and the Organs? And this was one of the most profound things I have read in quite some time. And it seems like this, together with some of the things I've been reading in the Might of the Thoughts book, is very profound, very hard to really absorb. I'm going to try to, maybe I'll go ahead and try to talk about that a little bit. And maybe you can throw in some observations and or questions. The mental fluidal powers, roughly stated, is a vibration in which the character, personality, and mentality of the human, and hence the psyche, thoughts and feeling, as well as impulses of the consciousness, are stored. So let me go back over that again. There are these vibrations that come off every human being, They come from our consciousness. They come from our body. And these vibrations, they store our character, our personality, our thoughts and feelings, our mentality, and all that. Well, these vibrations, they settle in things that are around us on a regular basis. For example, they'll settle in your walls of your house. They'll settle in furniture that's nearby, probably in your musical instruments, even in the trees that can be around your home. And these vibrations, for lack of a better word, are also stored in the cells of our body and our organs. And these vibrations actually contain information about our personality, about our thoughts, and our feelings. So I'm reading this article that I got from Marianne and trying to wrap my mind around this today. It was a beautiful sunny day. I had a day off work. I'm sitting out in the yard. You're looking at the beautiful, all the trees and everything, and trying to really absorb this. And it went on to say that, like, for example, they found that when a person has a transplant, for example, say one person needs a new heart and new lungs, you know, that's pretty major. And then someone died, so they're going to take the heart and the lungs from the person that died and put it in this other person who's really in need of these heart and lungs. Well, what they found out is that because of these fine fluidal energies that are stored even in our organs and in our body, if you get someone else's heart or you get someone else's lungs or things like that, you can actually also get their hopes, fears, addictions, sympathy, et cetera, et cetera. And they tell in this story about this person who got the heart and lungs from a younger person that had died in an unfortunate scenario. And suddenly this person that got the new heart and lungs, and they had never done this before, they had never wanted to ride motorcycles. They went out and bought a motorcycle. They never drank beer. They started drinking beer. They developed this craving for chicken McNuggets. They started eating chicken McNuggets all the time. Well, they found out that the donor of the heart and lungs was a motorcycle rider that drank a lot of beer and loved chicken McNuggets. So I thought, what an interesting story. And Marianne here is telling how she went out and she read this book by Dr. Bruce Lipton, which I call, what is the name of this book? It's somewhere in here. It's The Biology of Belief. And she didn't like that title, actually. She had another name she wanted to call it. But I thought that was an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very profound also, I think. At least I'm trying to really wrap my mind around this. But I have a clip here of Bruce Lipton talking about the biology of belief. So maybe we can get him on our radio shows someday. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Thank Doug Parks for providing this opportunity for me to speak here before you, and I want to thank you for coming out. because I have some very, very exciting information that I love to share with everybody. And this information really relates to what controls biology. And as Doug mentioned, I was a cellular biologist at the University of Wisconsin, cloning human muscle cells. I was taking cells out of people, putting them into the tissue culture dish, and studying individual cells in an effort to understand what was controlling their fate, what was making them dystrophic or pathological, what was making them normal, and in the control process. In this research, I started to come to an understanding that greatly differed from my whole scientific foundation, that we were controlled by genes. And in the end, the research let me in on the insight that it was the perception of the environment that controlled the cell. Well, at cell levels, perceptions are perceptions, but at human levels, perceptions are beliefs. And it turns out that it's actually our beliefs that select our genes and select our behavior. And the beautiful part about this, as Doug said, is it's life-changing for myself especially. I was one of the genetic kind of people, and now I've transitioned my whole life into this so-called New Age spiritual science of belief. And the wonderful part about this lecture, outside of the fact that I will provide you with a molecular connection of how a belief actually switches on a gene so that there's no like empty boxes, no devotion in this place. This is actually just molecules. I'm going to get that across, I hope. But the beautiful part about this is that in the second part of the presentation, a dear friend and colleague of mine, Rob Williams, is going to provide you with information and tools about how you can rapidly change beliefs. Belief changing is not that hard a process. In fact, it can be done almost in minutes. So there's new science and new tools available. But before I start, let's start off with a truth statement. This is a very simple truth statement. Knowledge is power. The more awareness you have, the more capable you are of surviving and succeeding. Well, this is a truth, but there's another truth as well that goes with this picture, and that is lack of knowledge results in a lack of power. Why is this relevant right now, this question about...
Well, what do you think about this, Solaris? Any thoughts on any of this? I kind of rattled on there for about 10 minutes.
No, I think it's great, and actually I totally resonate with Dr. Bruce Lipson. I think he's 100% spot on, and he's right. You know, it's all about, well, basically a manifested will, as we all know, but it's DNA activation, in my opinion, through frequency and light consciousness, higher consciousness, however you want to mask it. But, yeah, he's very interesting. Yeah, I'd love to have him on the show, and I think you should get him on as well.
I'll try, see if I can make contact. Oh, you know, by the way, I did... get in touch with Dr. Richard Souter. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, he sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's one of the underground base experts. And I'm also going to be interviewing a guy named Edward T. Martin, who has a book about Jesus in India, which I thought would be very interesting.
Yeah.
And tomorrow night I have Glenn Steckling on, but I'll probably miss the first half an hour of that. And a mad painter is going to take that for me. So,
Great. Anyway,
as I just chat on here and roll on.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I was going to say about the that donor, that was very interesting about the organ doning. And obviously that's connected to a form of psychic imprinting as well. So we all know that exists. And
isn't
that
interesting? You
know, yeah, it's all about cellular memory and cellular recall. It's fascinating, and which means, you know, if we use our capacity of our brains and our minds and consciousness, this whole world would change immediately.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, we can have a whole lot more effect on things than we realize, I think. Once
mm-hmm.
we understand,
absolutely.
Once we start to understand the incredible power of our own thoughts. And I think
agree.
That's one of the things we also have to learn to keep in control.
Mm-hmm. Well, the
because,
problem is, you know, he was. Oh, go ahead. I don't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, he was talking about not being alerted to knowledge, and a lot of people are being misled right now, and that is a weakness. That is their weakness, is not understanding the bigger scenery behind it all, which deflates the collective. I mean, we don't have any power generated, or they don't, per se, because they're not being told the truth. And this is why I think the truth movement, or whatever you want to call it, is really significant, because we need to take down all these veils of deception so people can once again become self-empowered.
Yeah, you know, the one of the things that really interests me about the Meyer case is reincarnation and this whole idea of multiple lifetimes. And the way the Meyer material presents it, you know, we have this thing, for lack of a better word, let's call it the human spirit, and it resides in our midbrain in an area called the superior colliculus. And that's the part of us, how can I say this, that is always consistent in this, in every lifetime. We have this superior colliculus. And the Meyer information says that when you die, your spirit form, your spirit comes out of your body and it goes into the spiritual realm, the fine matter world, this energy band around our planet. And also, something called your material consciousness also comes out of the body. The material consciousness is your thoughts and your feelings, the memories of, you know, what you've done in this current lifetime. All of those also kind of go into the spiritual realm. And there's something called the overall consciousness block, which kind of goes through your life, in a sense, replays your life, and takes those things which you've learned, which are valuable in the sense of evolutive, like things like, well, love and wisdom and patience and kindness, and it converts them into this neutral positive form so they can kind of be absorbed by the spirit, the human spirit. And then also, in some way, these past life experiences are also stored, like in the universal storage banks, the planetary storage banks. Now, and it's interesting, when you, the Meyer material says we spend about a lifetime and a half in the spiritual realm before we are reincarnated, typically. Now, because of high population and things like that, people can come back sooner. But let's say you spend a lifetime and a half, about 150 years or so, on the in the spiritual realm. All your previous life memories were processed and stored by the spirit form, and then the universal consciousness says, okay, it's time for your next lifetime. So a baby is born, and at 21 days, when it's 21 days old, that's when, the Meyer material says, that's when the universal consciousness takes that same spirit form that lived that previous life, places it in the superior colliculus of the child. Now, and something interesting happens, because the energy from that spirit form fans out into all the cells of the body and starts the heart to beating, gives life to all the cells. So the spirit form is kind of what animates things. Then the previous lifetime memories, the wisdom of the predecessor personalities, is then placed into the subconscious of the child. But the child gets a brand new material consciousness, a new personality. In some ways, in many ways, is a new person, even though the spirit is reincarnating. So as the child grows up, it'll get impulses from these storage banks, from universal storage banks, from the planetary storage banks, but it will also get inspiration from the predecessor personalities. So in the next lifetime, you kind of have a head start, so to speak, in that you get this help from the impulses from the storage banks and the inspiration from the predecessor personalities. Now, the Meyer information says this goes on, this happens, this cycle happens millions and millions and millions of times. And typically, from what I've read from different contact case notes, is that once you grow to adulthood, you will resemble, typically, not always, but many times, you will resemble the person that you were in previous lifetimes. Because some of the people in that Billy has met with, I can't remember exactly who it was off the top of my head, have said a couple times, wow, he looks so much like he did in his previous lifetime. You know, not exactly in those words, but basically something to that effect. And they also mention the same stuff in that the thoughts that we have also affect our appearance. So I don't know. I thought I would just throw that out at you and see if you thought that was interesting at all. I thought that was really some interesting material. Any comments on any of that?
Oh, yeah. No, it's very profound. You know, there's one thing about the Meyer material, it's very timeless. It's unlimited in so many realms and on so many different levels. And I totally, once again, I resonate with all of his material. And I do suspect that the one thing I do look at right now, insofar as reincarnation goes, I think he's 100% spot on about that. But my impression is that right now we don't have the wheel of reincarnation is broken. It's no longer, in other words, people have the option to incarnate on and off world. I really, truly believe that the way things are happening right now on the timeline and the multidimensional realm and multidimensional perspective, that I think everything is going to ascend. And I don't believe people will be coming back to this planet. I think this planet's going to ascend into what it's supposed to ascend into at some point, but it will implode before that. That's my own impression anyway. And, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. But the cellular memory, when you're talking about the personalities from multiple lifetimes, whether it's past, present, or even off-world lifetimes, which means soul extensions, and those have not transferred out. Those are lives. Those are real energies that descend into the being. So I'm well aware of those. And, yes, they totally assist the spirit of the person or the being within to activate to the next level of their programming, whether it's education and consciousness and inspiration like you were talking about. So, yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When I got this information from Marianne Ulinger, and she was mentioned in one of the contact notes, and I probably brought this up on your show before, but the Meyer information says that like 389,000 years ago, a group of extraterrestrial humans were here on the Earth called the Lyrians, and they brought about 2 million of them here, and they were very advanced. They were titans. They had tremendous abilities in terms of their material consciousness, and they were very, very large, and they obviously had very, very advanced technologies. But they violated some certain rules and laws when they were here. For one thing, some of them evidently weren't as advanced or balanced in terms of their spiritual life as they should have been. So they abused Earth humanity in some ways. So this codex was set up like an agreement where certain one of those Lyrians would stay behind, and they would live lifetimes here on the Earth as an Earth human and try to make amends for some of the damage that was done in previous times. And anyway, Marianne was identified by Billy as one of those people, one of those Lyrians that was operating under the Codex. And they also said that there was like 20 or 30 other people, something to that effect. I don't remember exactly how many, that should be in Switzerland right now helping out with the mission. But they are resisting what Marianne called the Bestimmung, which are the destiny impulses in German. So there are certain people... Isn't that interesting? They're being impulsed to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that was very interesting, because you know, I keep always going back to that section called How It All Began. When Billy was a very, very young boy, he's growing up in Switzerland. He's about 4 years old. He wakes up at 3 a.m. He crawls out that lower window in his bedroom, and he sits down on a bench that his father had built outside, and he looks up. It's a warm night in May, much like tonight, and he looks up at a beautiful starry sky. Here's this little four-year-old boy, and he hears his own voice say, "My life exists because of the love of creation, and since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And he said he was filled with these good memories, and he suddenly knew the purpose of his life and what he was to do on this earth. So he had this really profound experience as a very, very young boy, and it kind of got him started on the path that he's on. And I wonder if some of us, to a lesser degree, may at some point in our life have a similar experience. What do you think, Solaris?
I think so. I mean, depending on the age, it's really interesting how he was so young when he experienced that. But I think people go through these awakenings, you know, throughout their timeline of their existence. Sometimes it's through initiation, self-initiation, or just plain advancement through education and higher consciousness. I think people do. You'll notice that, you know, it seems to me like every decade people change and shift in vibration. They learn, they grow, they evolve. And by the time they're into their 40s and 50s, it seems like they're really starting to master who they are as multidimensional beings. Most people who are awakened are anyway. And then, of course, it just keeps progressing. So I find the whole process fascinating. However, when you think about it, it seems to me like, you know, you get to these levels of consciousness and then all of a sudden you transfer out and you come back and hopefully you're not going to get nulled out, right? Because it's like it's too redundant to go back and start rehashing and going back to the cellular memory to reactivate yourself to the level you were before, right?
Isn't that the truth? It's very interesting. I think that's part of the problem here on the Earth, because the normal lifetime would be about 1,000 years.
Right.
When you would gain a tremendous amount of wisdom. And
they don't want you living that long.
No, they don't. I mean, if you die, you're right. At about 40, it takes you to get 40 or 50 to finally get your frame of reference and start to understand what you should be doing and understand what life's about. And then, like you said, you've only got 10, 20 years, maybe 30 at best, if your brain still works when you're older. That makes
right.
it difficult.
It does. Well, you think, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, sorry about that. But the false matrix is what we're dealing with here. And it's literally, I think the fact that people are awakening, we're taking the matrix down. And since this the programming and all these controllers are responsible for this holographic design work, we can actually reset that hologram. And I think that's what we're dealing with. I think we're dealing with a defective program that's been running interference by these cabals, whatever you want to call them, that are literally wreaking havoc on the timelines. So, I mean, once you get to that level, we can tear it down, and then we don't have to keep coming back with the illusion. We can progress with our star families. And that's what I think we're supposed to be doing, quite honestly.
You know, and I think this, if we hadn't have screwed things up so bad, this would be just a tremendous planet to...
Oh, yeah.
To continue your evolution on. If it wasn't so overpopulated and screwed up in so many different ways by the people, the planet itself is tremendous. It's awesome.
Well, I agree with you, but the mass collective is so programmed, they're so violent. And I mean, I look across the board and I'm amazed at how much evil there is on this world.
Oh, I know.
You know, that's the part that's limiting evolution. I mean, as long as that exists, as long as there's this conflict happening, they're not going to make it. And you know it, and Billy probably knows it too. I mean, it's just not going to happen. They need to ascend and need to get with the program and let go of the false matrix and move on. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen, Mark. I mean, I think there is a breakaway in a state of consciousness for those of us who are connected to star families. I think we have to move on. We can't just sit around here and wait for everybody to step up because they're not going to.
Let me play a clip from Steve Quayle talking about Jade Helm, since we've kind of focused on the circumstances as they are. And let's talk about this, and then we'll maybe get our thoughts back on the spiritual stuff again here. But you bring up a lot of good points. Here's Steve Quayle on Jade Helm.
notice a change when Middle East terrorists became obviously embraced by this administration. Now, that's the context. I think that people have got to understand that context, David, because what we're talking about is not an exercise. When the local police are told to stand down and not respond to gunfire, by the way, it's a live fire exercise. When we've seen massive YouTube videos, you guys at InfoWars.com have led the charge in showing all the videos coming into you from all over the country. People are now starting to get it. And the point that I want to really get across to everyone today, and thank you for taking this hour out of your time to interview me, is this. This is the full-scale implementation of the red, the blue, and the green list. The red list are people. Now, do you remember, David, and I'll let you obviously respond, because that's just my intro, the days years ago when gun owners' homes are being GPS'd?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we warned about that. And we tried to get people to understand. I was literally in my front yard in a, right at a mountain community at the base of the mountains in Bozeman, Montana, when the guy came up with his GPS unit and his bicycle and came literally to my front door, and I watched. The reason I didn't challenge him at the time, I wanted to see. To the left of me were leftists, to the right of me were leftists, and I wanted to see if they even got GPS. Absolutely not, okay? So I watched. This is not a report. Well, we heard massive reports of that happening. And the deal that people have got to understand is this, that with the implementation of the red list, the blue list, and green list, that was given to me almost 20 years ago, actually before that, about how it would be implemented when they were ready to make their move by the former head of the Environmental Protection Agency, who was murdered for the
Anyway, Solaris, you know, we could be on the red list.
Oh well, I'm not worried about it. In the illusion of, right? I'm not actually sure they have those lists, to be honest with you, but it's interesting nonetheless.
I don't know. I find this whole... I've almost become a spectator. I just watch this stuff. I don't really let it bother me so much anymore. We're just going to have to see how this crazy movie plays itself out.
Exactly. Well, you have to be neutral. You have to play a neutral stance in the whole thing and just observe it. That's what I've been doing, because I can see everybody's point. I truly can, but at the same time, I know that this is the Jade Hell 15 is a psychological warfare program. It's a psyop. And what it's designed to do is get people worked up, and they've succeeded. So they've achieved their goal already. That's already done. So anything else, I don't think anything's going to happen, to be honest with you. I think that was it. I think it was the psyop. It was the intent, just the intent and the structuring and the, I don't want to say goose-stepping, but the concept of doing it really freaked people out.
You know, and that's the thing we have to watch about all of this. And one of the things we got to watch out is make sure we don't get into wrong thinking, because wrong thinking actually hurts our organs. For example, there's scientific evidence that says that anger actually harms our liver. And excess of anger hurts our liver, hurts our gallbladder. So we need to really protect our psyche, and we shouldn't retreat into a shell, and we shouldn't be shouting in anger, because anger is really toxic for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So is fear and anxiety.
Yeah, you have to channel the energy. You have to redirect the flow. You know, like a martial artist, if you get frustrated about something, I always train, I work out, I mean, I channel the energy. And that's what people need to do is have an outlet, a positive outlet for what's going on with them on an energetic scale. But, you know, it's all about directing the energy, because a lot of people are empathic to this whole agenda, and they get sucked into it like a black hole, but they need to redirect the flow. In other words, we have to take our power back and start using higher consciousness to direct what we want to establish while we're here. Because that's where they're getting our power. If we give them the power, if we start focusing on them all the time, we're giving our energy to them and we're making them stronger.
I've been saying this to myself lately. When I feel myself go into a little bit of worry or anxiety, a little bit of negative think, I tell myself, all is well. All is well. Mm-hmm. I live in love and harmony and peace. You know, all is well. So that's one of the things I... There's some sayings. Another saying to counteract anger is here from the Meyer Information. I am strong. I am indestructible. For in myself, I am full of love, peace, freedom, harmony, and feelings. and compassion for all creatures. So that's the lesson from all this, to keep our thoughts neutral, positive, and because if we do that, we're going to protect our own happiness, we maintain our own happiness, and we're going to maintain our own health.
Right, and you won't polarize with the opposing energies, which, you know, you just don't want to do that. I mean, I still think that people need to take their power back, and I believe in the positive affirmations. I think those are huge, meditation, positive affirmation. But actually, they also need to redirect their energy like a real magician. I mean that truly. They really need to understand how energy works, how the cosmos works, and how they can change what they don't want in the false matrix, because that's what these guys are trying to do to you. Or the masses that are listening. They're literally trying to redirect the dynamic of this holographic field to create a reality that you are not supposed to be in. And you have to change that. You cannot let these guys do this. So that's where I take a stand on that.
The Meyer
Spirit
Form.
It's like a meta-programmer. Oh, go ahead.
The Meyer Spirit Form, they call Nokodamian. The extraterrestrials know his spirit form is Nokodamian because they know about the lives he had off-planet billions of years ago. In Nokodamian's mental block meditation, says something like this: I live in love, I live in peace, I live in freedom, I live in harmony, I live joyously and carefree, I live in health, I live in joy. So that's another one of those meditations to get your mental fluid powers focused in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play another clip about this Jade Helm stuff. I just think it's interesting. I think, you know, there is value probably in looking at this stuff without, like you said, without letting it work you up and learning to be neutral about it and kind of watch it like a movie. Without getting wrapped up in it. So let's play this clip. It's an interesting movie. Here we go.
He fights a foreign enemy. Police keep the peace and are peace officers and report to the local government and bring people in who have been indicted, who there's an arrest warrant out for. But in this new third world system that we're going into, there is a massive program. No exaggeration, it's got to be 50 times bigger than the Manhattan Project that they've been keeping quasi-secret because they don't want to have a public debate about militarization of police and all that's happening and the NSA spying. So they just deny it, deny it, deny it. That was in The Guardian yesterday, that federal agencies have a policy of lying. There's no stingray. There's no NSA. There's no plan to take your guns. There's no gun confiscations happening. This is not an assault. This is not an attack. So we're always debating with them whether it's happening or not. And they have this moral authority. There's no helicopters. There's no drills. Remember that going on 20 years ago, 15 years ago? We'd get the footage. I'd be attacked on hard copy, on Extra, on CNN, on Fox News, in the Associated Press, local papers. I would go to these drills and have them break in my hotel room, harass me, try to set me up, just because they didn't want the public to know that they were there federalizing police and training them with the military. But now it's, of course we are, and we come in peace. But InfoWars, you can't come to our drill. Well, citizen reporters still go, and you're trying to take on the Tea Party. Well, I mean, sure, duh, we have all your manuals. We know... 2 years ago, it comes out, the Civilian Inmate Labor Camp, the Emergency Centers Establishment Act, and the internment resettlement operations for inside the U.S. You can just type in internment resettlement inside the U.S., re-education camps for Americans, Army.
Clarice, you know, I think we may end up, and this may sound crazy to you. It's okay if it sounds crazy to you. Just tell me it sounds crazy. But I still haven't given up on the human race. I think I just have this feeling like somehow people are going to wake up. And we're going to, like you said, we're going to learn to use our thoughts. And, I don't think we're out of the fight. I'll just say that. What do you think?
What? Well, I agree with you on a lot of different levels. I don't think that there's a majority of people who are really switched on insofar as taking their power back and creating the change on the timelines. However, I do believe that it doesn't take that many. In other words, we have several star beings here, which I call us star beings, and we're not human. There's no such thing. I mean, we are star beings encased in a form, and we're here. We bring this multiversal energies with us, and we can change everything that's happening here. And to me, what I've seen is a strategic way of trying to control, manipulate consciousness. They're really trying to control consciousness. And so once we know what the game is, we understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop everybody from ascending. That's the bottom line. So now that we understand the game, we have to alter the game. It's as simple as that. And you're right, you should treat it as a neutral thing. I really haven't given up on the race, so to speak, but I will say there's too much going on here where people aren't thinking, they're not taking a step outside of themselves, they're squabbling about stupid things, and there's a huge deployment, as you know, of covert tactical hardware, which deals with mind control and psychotronic warfare, and I know that beast very well, so I'm well aware of what they can do. You know, when Alex Jones says that they lie all the time, he's right, they do. They don't tell the truth. There's not one thing you'll ever hear in any covert corporate government that will be honest. You know that, we know that, the listeners know it. So we just have to deal with that. They're compulsive liars, and they're not to be trusted, bottom line.
Do you feel like I feel like I'm making progress. I feel like my consciousness is evolving. I feel like your consciousness is evolving. And I think that there maybe are enough of us in the alternative media now who are evolving in a positive way, that maybe we can actually start to see some very positive things happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm crossing my fingers here. I know. Shoot me down if you want.
No, not at all. No, I actually think your presence, doing what you're doing on radio and actually communicating the Billy Meyer material is a real service to everyone because it's awakening them, raising their vibration. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful teaching tool. So I appreciate what you're doing, plus the interviews that you're doing with everybody. I mean, yeah, I totally resonate that you're doing wonderful work here. I hope to think that I'm doing same or similar insofar as awakening people to the higher levels. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think it's good enough. I mean, and I'm like a perfectionist, okay? So I keep going on and on, and I keep ascending. But I'm a writer, too, and an author, so I do other things. But I still think that there has to be we need to do something more powerful than what's going on right now. And I think that that power really lies with getting people together as a mass group and focusing energetically on certain areas across the map. That's my take, anyway. I think they have done those experiments in the past. I think we need to start really focusing on that again.
Are you talking about like a mass meditation?
Something similar, yeah, absolutely. Something that will change the dynamic and really, really start to shift all this stuff. People need to start working on a unison scale, on a higher level, which means higher self, over self, superconscious, linked up, synced up, and then start to run energy for this because we have got to stop this. We have got to stop this, and we can very easily.
I spent about 90 minutes today meditating. Mostly a kind of a relaxation kind of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the kind of meditation you're talking about is like focusing on maybe peace.
It's more like remote influence. Actually,
yeah.
What I do is more, you know, the bottom line is I like to meet them at their own game. In other words, and I've done this before with grid running, so I'm well aware of what needs to be done insofar as just changing the dynamic. I mean, we cannot allow, because we're all here by universal law, there is no limitation in consciousness at all, which means that nobody has the right in any form or design to violate you on your evolutionary path. And if they're doing so, they have to be negated. And that means by running energy and opposing, and not like Velcro energy. I'm talking using the frequencies of the full light universe to descend and shift the dynamics so that this stuff gets off the game board completely. It just can't be like this. They can't keep doing this program anymore. It has to fail. It has to be disabled.
I got a clip here on meditation. I don't know how good it is, but I'll play it. Since we're talking about meditation, I thought it might be appropriate.
There's no way a fidgety and skeptical news anchor would ever have started meditating were it not for the science. The science is really compelling. It shows that meditation can boost your immune system, lower your blood pressure, help you deal with problems ranging from irritable bowel syndrome to psoriasis. And the neuroscience is where it really gets sci-fi. There was a study out of Harvard that shows that short daily doses of meditation can literally grow the gray matter in key areas of your brain having to do with self-awareness and compassion and shrink the gray matter.
You know, that's interesting. I wanted to throw something in. I was reading somewhere today in the Meyer material where they have done research and I forget what it is, whether it was anger or anxiety, one of those two thoughts like that can actually shrink part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty scary, yeah. Isn't it? He's saying that meditation can actually help grow brain cells. That's awesome.
Well, you're expanding your aura. You're raising your vibratory rate. And as you do this, you're resonating with universal harmonics, which means you're at the cellular level, you're starting to heal and repair yourself. So, yeah, meditation is huge. And it doesn't have to be like some people don't like to meditate and sit and meditate. Well, you can do Tai Chi, Qigong, you can garden, you can do things that are not necessarily, you know, pertaining to just sitting meditation.
No.
But I'm a firm believer in both. I mean, what's that?
I always kind of recline in a recliner when I meditate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, whatever works for you.
I've been stretching a lot, and I'm finally comfortable, you know, in a seated meditation position. Now, I wasn't for a long time because I didn't stretch enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was too stiff. I wasn't comfortable, but I always lay back in the chair. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, you did fine. No. I know how you're dedicated to your meditations, and I used to be more so before I was hit with that induction program, but I still have other methods of meditation which are more what I call fast-track meditation and consciousness. It's like a waking consciousness energy that it's not like I have to go lie down or sit anywhere. I'm moving the energy constantly as I'm moving through life and navigating. So I'm in a waking state of, I don't want to say I'm sleeping. I'm not, but I'm just constantly running the energy like that. So, but I'm a firm believer in meditation. And once again, I mean, I think that's where people need to start. You start with their heart center, their higher consciousness, and anchor it in and start moving that energy and start healing it, because that brings more awareness. Once your higher self, lower soul kicks in, you see with more clarity, as you and I both know.
Absolutely. It helps so much. Let's pick back up in our clip.
Meditation is going to join the pantheon of no-brainers like exercise, brushing your teeth, and taking the meds that your doctor prescribes to you. These are all things that if you don't do, you feel guilty about. And that is where I think we're heading with meditation, because the science is so strongly suggestive that meditation can do really, really great things for your brain and for your body. The common assumption that we have, and it may be subconscious, is that our happiness really depends on external factors. How was our childhood? Have we won the lottery recently? Did we marry well? Did we marry at all? But in fact, meditation suggests that happiness is actually a skill, something you can train just the way you can train your body in the gym. It's a self-generated thing. And that's a really radical notion. It doesn't mean that external circumstances aren't going to impact your happiness. It doesn't mean you're not going to be subject to the vagaries of an impermanent entropic universe. Just means you were going to be able to navigate this with a little bit more ease.
I love these conversations because I never know which direction we're going to go.
Mm-hmm. But it's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
It really is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I got another clip. I don't know how good it is, but it's on meditation. I think meditation is so healthy. Everyone that listens to this later and downloads it, it took me years to finally get around to meditating. It's one of the best skills you'll ever learn. People have different ways of meditating. I'm not saying my way is better than any other way. I'm not even doing the exact way the Meyer people say. But what I do is I'll lay back in my recliner here, and I'll take three very deep breaths to try to get rid of any negative energy that's built up. And then I'll think of the color blue, and then I'll see a blue sky. And then after a few seconds, I'll think of the color green, and I'll see a green grassy hillside. And then I'll think of the color yellow, and I'll see a yellow sun. And then I'll think of the color red, and then my mind's eye will see a setting sun, or it will see a rose, or it will see a candle flame. And then I'll try to focus just on that mental image for a while. And if any thoughts come in, the things that you want to get rid of are verbal thoughts. Verbal thoughts are very... they'll make you feel very uneasy. You want to focus on just an image, because then you'll start to feel that stillness. What you want to do is to make the material consciousness completely still. See, what you're trying to do is you're actually opening up your subconscious and your unconscious mind a little bit, and you're shutting down the material day-to-day consciousness. Now, you might have another image that you like I'll visualize Mount Adams in Washington State, a beautiful mountain. Sometimes I'll just visualize that for a minute or so. And then eventually, if you can keep pushing out all the verbal thoughts, eventually you'll have a deep sense of relaxation come over you. And then just again, focus on images. Sometimes then different images will fade in. Sometimes I can, and this is a really weird thing that I've been able to do, is when I'm seeing with total clarity, it's like I can walk around my house here in my mind, or I can walk around in the forest here, the beautiful, you know, over by the sled hill, and I can in my mind walk on the trails like I did today, or in my mind's eye I can sit in my chair out here on the hillside and watch, you know, see the hill go down and see the trees, all the beautiful green trees with their sprouting, and see the pond over there, and see what you're doing there is you're taking away the verbal thoughts and you're focusing your mind in a way that's very peaceful and relaxing. And if you do that for long enough, you'll gently get into the state just before you sleep. But you won't go to sleep. You'll be at that one, you know, that wonderful relaxation you get just before you go to sleep. Well, with this kind of meditation, you can stay in that state. And one of the things that happens is you completely detach from time. So you can stay in that state for half an hour, and it'll feel like 5 minutes. I mean, you look at your watch when you finally pull yourself out, and you'll think, oh my goodness, 30 minutes went past. But you only experienced 3 to 5 minutes in your perception of time. It's an amazing thing. You guys that are listening to this should try it sometime. I'm going to play this next clip. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what it says. We'll find out. Here we go.
Well, I have a lot of different responses to that question, what meditation really is. But I would say that meditation is living your life as if it really mattered. And that means you got to be here for it, with awareness and with a certain degree of kindness towards oneself and an understanding of the deep interconnectedness of all life and all beings. So that's something that understanding doesn't come from here. It comes from directly connecting with the totality of your being. And the first foundation of mindfulness is the body. So that's a wonderful place to start. And so if we could just learn to tune into our own bodies and see how responsive and dynamical they are in relationship to other people, to various changing circumstances in our lives and in our own minds and so forth, then we would be able to live a life that is a kind of embodiment of clarity, wisdom, kindness, and
you know, that's one of the things I find with meditation, Solaris, is it puts me back into a state of clarity and relaxation and kindness. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Right, it resets your battery, your spiritual battery, without a doubt. Yeah, it spins out all the debris, all the drama, all the possible negative components that are surrounding with the lower astral and all the other stuff that's bombarding us, and literally clears it all out. And you do that through breathing and through visualization, as you were saying. And you know, everybody has their own method and own way of doing meditation and affirmations, which are extremely powerful. Because what you're doing is programming your mind in a positive way versus negative programming.
I wish I'd have started years ago, but I'm just glad I started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so helpful. It's so rejuvenating. Let me continue here on our clip.
And to meditators for long stretches of time is the present moment, the only moment that we ever are alive in, and yet most of the time we're off someplace else in the past or in the future. And scheming.
That's another thing, is meditation really puts you in the present moment. And that's why I think you detach from time.
Right, you're in a state of higher consciousness.
Is that what it is?
Well, that's what it sounds like to me, because without time is a benchmark of measure. Mankind created time. There is no time in any universal space of consciousness. There is no such thing as time. It doesn't exist. We go through consciousness in motion. So that's what's going on. You're raising your vibratory rate to probably sync up with universal energies and universal harmonics, which deals with consciousness in motion.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. I wish I really completely understood that. I think I'm starting to understand bits and pieces of that. Here we go.
Dead, all bets are off. I know different people have different stories about that, but why not appreciate this lifetime and see what it has to offer? And so everybody, one other thing I'll say about the meditation is that there's no one right way to do it. So everybody needs to, in some sense, find the thread for themselves and then test it against reality, the greatest meditation teacher of all, and in that way also taking inspiration and instruction from great teachers everywhere who often turn out to be your...
You know, I found another thing. Sitting outside in a beautiful environment in nature kind of naturally puts you in a bit of a meditative state. At least for me, it does.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I do too. I'm outside.
When I get into those deep meditations that where I disconnect from time, typically I'm inside with those. But it's interesting. A lot of times, especially in the past couple of weeks, I've been sitting out. You know, I'll get up at 6 in the morning and go out and feed the cats and sit on the back porch, and slowly the sun will come up, and you know, the little calico, she'll jump up on the chair next to me and then walk over and sit on my lap, and the little gray guy, he'll be out there running around trying to chase a bug or trying to pounce on something, and I can watch the sun come up, and that is so relaxing. And typically I'll see, you know, all the birds will start chirping and waking up, and I can see the sun slowly coming up over the hill and all the trees. And this morning I saw 8 deer. No, that was the morning before. I saw 8 deer as they kind of walked through the area. This morning I saw a big raccoon, which I would not like to see again, but he took off. He went pretty far down. But it's really nice. I think... there are different meditative states, and that's more of a wakeful meditation. Anyway, we're actually running out of time, Solaris. We've got about 2 minutes left on the stream. If you want to tell the folks about your websites or your shows or any words of wisdom, we got a minute and 51 seconds.
Okay, well, I'll talk quick. I want to thank you very much, Mark. It's been a pleasure tonight. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and my website is Night Shadow Anomaly Detectives. And thanks for having me on.
All right, Solaris. We'll talk soon. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.